Got an itch? Cough? Pain? The doctor is in. Dr. Michael Smith answers your questions. You can ask by emailing your question or going to the Healthy Talk page on RadioMD.com. Listen, learn, and live a better life. And send questions. Ask Dr. Mike Smith at RadioMD.com.
Okay, let's get started. I have four or five questions, as always. I'll try to get to all of them, although the ones I chose today may take a little more explanation, so maybe we'll see where I get. Question number one, what are my alternatives to mammograms? And I thought this was an interesting question because I just did an article for the Life Extension magazine, the October issue, on this very question. They have an Ask the Doctor section. And so let's talk about what are the alternatives. And I'm assuming that this question was asked from the perspective that you don't want so much radiation, right? I mean, that's really – because when you look at how well mammograms are when it comes to detecting breast cancer, we call that sensitivity and specificity data. All that means is when you take a screening tool – and you want to test how well it is at finding a problem, that's called sensitivity. But then you also want to be able to test how well it's able to distinguish between the real problem and, like, say, what's called a false positive, that's called specificity. So mammograms are very sensitive, and they have a very nice specificity. The problem is there's a lot of ionized radiation. As a matter of fact, there's been some smaller studies that have shown that, you know, that accumulation of radiation over a woman's lifetime might even cause some problems, even increase the risk of cancer down the line. Although that's not well worked out, it's a theory, but I think it's a legitimate concern and in question. So I like this question. And so I'm assuming we're coming from that, what are the tests I can do to detect breast cancer that aren't, or at least have less ionized radiation? So the first one is going to be MRI, magnetic resonance imaging. Now, MRI has about the same sensitivity and specificity as mammograms. So right there, you might be thinking, well, why aren't we using MRIs then? I mean, if it's MRIs have no ionized radiation, right? So right there, you know that's good. And it has, in terms of detecting a real breast cancer, it's just about as good as a mammogram. Well, the issue, it really comes down to cost. A lot of insurances still aren't covering MRIs for breast cancer detection, so sometimes it's even out-of-pocket cost. And so those become more, you know, non-medical type issues, but they do have to be worked out. But MRI, I really believe, offers a really good alternative to mammograms. Matter of fact, you know, based on research over the past, say, 4 or 5 years, MRI has been shown to be so good at detecting breast cancer that doctors are now, with insurances accepting it, recommending it in high-risk patients. So women at high risk for breast cancer, maybe you've already had breast cancer and you're watching for a reoccurrence, maybe you have a first-degree relative, maybe you have some of the genetic markers that put you at risk for breast cancer, but whatever the reason, if you're in a high-risk category, insurances and doctors will start with an MRI because it is sensitive and it is specific for picking up that breast cancer. I do think that it is something that we should be using more in breast cancer screening. There's another one that's ultrasound. Ultrasound's another alternative. Ultrasound has some limitations. It's not as sensitive. It's not as specific as mammograms or MRI, but it does work in younger women. It does work if you're dealing more with a cystic-type lesion or mass. So there are instances where ultrasound is a good option, but it not before MRI or mammography. And then, of course, there's thermography. Now, I took a big hit in my article on this. I know there's a lot of proponents of thermography. This is where you're using a machine that picks up the heat. The heat changes, the blood flow changes around a mass that might be a cancer or an infection or what have you. And and I listed as my third option. And I guess some of the readers of the article just wanted to be more higher up my list, but based on data over the past you know, say 5 or 6 years. It's just the data is a little confusing because there's, you know, I could show you some studies using thermography where the sensitivity and specificity is pretty good, matching that of mammography. But then there's a lot of other ones where it's not, that the data actually is concluding that it's not a good screening tool. So I just think we need better research. We need larger studies with thermography. There are better ways of using thermography. There's digital cameras they use now. So that'll be interesting to see how those types of techniques influence thermography. But right now it remains the third option. So MRI is the first, ultrasound second, thermography would be third. All right, so number two, what are branched chain amino acids? Well, okay, so there's amino acids are what get together to make proteins in your body. So the individual building blocks of protein are amino acids. And three of them, we call them branched chain. It just means that they're not linear. They form branches. That's all that means. It's leucine, isoleucine, and valine. It does seem that, but I don't think that that's what this person is, that's the answer this person is wanting. I think they want to know more, why would I use branched chain amino acids? Well, you know, there's evidence that these three amino acids, when done, say, in a supplement form, are pretty good at improving muscle tonicity, muscle mass, lean muscle mass, increasing the immune response. There's even some evidence coming out of the Archives of Internal Medicine in 2009 that these branched chain amino acids, when done together, can reduce blood pressure quite significantly. And then even some research coming out of the Life Extension Foundation, where I'm the senior scientist, showing some longevity benefits. Now, these weren't human studies. These were mice studies, but mice, the overall increase in longevity was quite significant when fed branched chain amino acids. So branched chain amino acids are simply amino acids. They're not linear. They form branches. That's the name. But because of that, they have some special physiology in the body that I don't have time to go into. Go check out lifeextension.com. We go through all the different physiology of branched chain amino acids, but ultimately muscle, immunity, longevity, and maybe even blood pressure. Question number three. Is there anything new coming out on treating Ebola? And I'm getting tons of Ebola questions, and I don't blame people. It's a scary infection, and at least in West Africa at this point, it does not seem like we're containing it very well. So I think this is a question that we do need to deal with. Well, first of all, there is a vaccine that's just started human clinical trials coming out of Canada. This vaccine was shown to be safe and effective in preventing and decreasing severity of diseases in primates. So we're now fast-tracking this in Canada into human clinical trials. So hopefully we'll have some results within the next about 4 to 6 months for a potential vaccine. So that's good news there. I know I have people who are totally against vaccines. I get that. But in this case, I think when you look at how it's spreading in West Africa, if we could get some sort of preventative measure through a vaccine out there, that would make a major impact. So, but there is an interesting treatment. Ebola follows what is known as sepsis. You know, when you have bacteria in your bloodstream, we call that sepsis, and there's a vascular breakdown. That's where the hemorrhage, the bleeding comes from Ebola. So Ebola looks a lot like sepsis, and there's been success in treating sepsis with melatonin. Melatonin seems to reverse a lot of that vascular breakdown that you see in sepsis. So now we're looking at doing some research in melatonin and Ebola infection in preventing ultimately that vascular collapse that can happen, which is what kills people with Ebola. So melatonin, believe it or not, is something that we're looking at here at Life Extension. So there you go. That's all I had time for. I knew these were going to be a little bit longer. This is Healthy Talk on Radio MD. I'm Dr. Mike. Stay well.